At the end of each month, Current State checks in with Great Lakes commentator and journalist Gary Wilson for updates on environmental stories from around the basin. For today's Great Lakes Month in Review, we're focusing on fracking, ballast water, and pet coke. Back in July, Michigan residents watched as pet coke piled up along the Detroit River. Now, residents in Chicago are scrutinizing rising piles of the waste product. Wilson explained that pet coke is the byproduct of the tar sand petroleum being mined in Canada and throughout the northern tier of the United States.
When that gets refined, like at the Marathon refinery in Detroit and at the British Petroleum refinery on the Whiting, Indiana, which is just borders on Chicago, the byproduct of that is the petroleum coke, pet coke as it's being called. And it's got to be stored someplace before it goes someplace else. And right now it happens to be on the banks of the Detroit River, for example, the Calumet River, and those are in neighborhoods that where people live.
What is happening to the piles in Detroit?
The piles in Detroit have been moved. You know, there was a big outcry by the community there and even people in Canada. The wind was blowing the dust all around. There's particulate matter there, and it was causing problems. And after people trying to deny, well, gee, that's not a problem, but the outcry was such that they finally moved it. And actually, that's one of the mysteries. Where did it go? Everybody thinks it kind of went to Ohio. But that doesn't mean that more won't appear, because this is a growing issue.
It's not clear where it went?
It's not clear. People think it went to Ohio, but trying to trace the trail of this is not the easiest thing in the world. It's controversial.
And there's an environmental justice component here, too, correct, Gary?
Yes. So sadly, Mark, that's so often the case. These substances like the pet coke, so often stored adjacent to neighborhoods where, you know, people live, where kids play. And there's particulate matter floating in the air. And unfortunately, you know, these are people with less resources. They're less able to defend themselves against this type of action and negligence, if you will, by the people storing the pet coke.
Are these pet coke piles going to become a more common sight across the country?
Yes, they are. One of the activists in Chicago, Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council, and they track the pet coke and the whole tar sands issue quite heavily. The British Petroleum site and factory in Chicago is just now starting to gear up. They're not anywhere near full production, and they've already generated pet coke piles there five stories high. So he reminded me that this is just the beginning of an issue that's going to have to be dealt with over the long term.
So no regulation, is there a permit process for storing pet coke?
There is a permit process. What happens is the Marathon refinery in Detroit and the British Petroleum refinery in Chicago, they have permits for their premises. And they comply with the permits. They're very adamant about that. But they don't have storage facilities, so it gets passed off to a third party for storage. That's when it starts to get murky. In Detroit, all the permits were secured after the fact. And, you know, the further away you get from the source, the harder it is to keep track of it. What the people on the south side of Chicago want is they want to be stored properly. They want it to be covered, because when the wind blows, it's in their windows.
Another issue people in the Great Lakes region are taking note of is ballast water and ballast water standards. A federal judge has tossed out the National Wildlife Federation's ballast water suit, which was requesting tougher standards than are being implemented. What's the origins of this lawsuit?
Well, the environmental groups, Mark, have been battling with the EPA and the Coast Guard for years, probably 10 to 12 years now, about ballast water standards. They want stricter standards for the ocean-going vessels that come into the Great Lakes. Shipping industry is opposed to them. What this relates to is bringing in invasive species. The Great Lakes are subject to about 180 invasive species that have been brought in over the years, most of them in ballast water. So the environmental groups, they want tougher standards. EPA is working towards tougher standards, but the shipping industry has prevailed so far. They want the international standards. There is an international set of standards for ballast water disposal, and the industry is happy to meet the international standards. And their position is, Great Lakes cities, you want to be an international port, then you should abide by the international standards. And for the most part, the EPA and the U.S. Coast Guard have agreed with them. National Wildlife Federation finally got tired of trying to work within the system and sued the EPA for violation of the Clean Water Act. But it was a technical administrative suit, and the federal judge just didn't see it, and he tossed the suit. The net of that is that the environmental groups are starting to run out of places to go. These regulations will be implemented pretty soon, and we'll just have to see what happens from here.
What would shippers have to do differently if the tougher standard were implemented?
That's a point of contention. The environmental groups say, first of all, the shippers can, it's a little bit like automobile emissions. Tougher emission standards are proposed, and the auto companies historically said, well, gee, we can't do that. We can't do that by that timeline. But when they're imposed, then the automobile companies usually did meet the timeline. Mm-hmm. It can be done. It's sort of the same thing with the ballast water standards. The companies want to hold out for these international standards, and they're loath to try to invest the money to do more.
And the impact on the Great Lakes, as you suggested here, has been profound in the past, the quagga mussel and others.
Exactly, and it costs money. One Canadian study said that various cities around the region and other entities spend about $200 million a year just dealing with the mitigation of invasive species. You can't get rid of them. All you can try to do is manage them.
Are environmental groups looking at options that they're being forced to look at that they haven't had to resort to before because of the situation?
Well, I think right now environmental groups are kind of stepping back and searching, what do we do next? I talked to a couple of environmental lawyers who are very close to the ballast water issue, and the significance of this suit being tossed is that environmental groups are sort of now out of options. These rules are going to be implemented, and there isn't much wiggle room from here on.
And Gary, what's been going on that's arguably overlooked or underreported?
Sure, Mark. Beneath the radar, I think, is this University of Michigan study that Governor Snyder commissioned sometime earlier this year about fracking. So what are the facts of fracking? What's the way forward with fracking? The University of Michigan and a group that they've assembled are looking at the whole issue of how much water is being taken, what pollutants are being used, or chemicals are being used in the fracking process, and getting input from a number of different constituencies around the state. The reason why this is important is because it's not getting a lot of play, but fracking regulations are going to come out of this study, and it'll set the path for the future.
And why should the public take note of this?
Boy, if you live in an area that's going to be fracked and you have a well, your well could be exposed. It's very important. It's groundwater, which a colleague of mine says that groundwater in Michigan is really sort of the orphan. Everybody pays a lot of attention to the Great Lakes, but groundwater is just as important. And especially fracking exposes some really high-value streams to water depletion if it's not done right.
Gary Wilson is a Chicago-based Great Lakes commentator, and he joins us on the last Tuesday of every month for our Great Lakes Month in Review. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you. Good to be here.
This segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday as part of our partnership.